It's May 27th, 2018. This is episode 68 of Fancy Ramen. I'm Neil.
I'm Cookie.
And I'm Scott.
And this is the episode where we ask Scott, do you care about Detroit Become Human spoilers?
The more I hear, the less worried I become about spoilers. So why don't we just move forward with reckless abandon? And if something really wonderful gets spoiled for me, I'll, you know, snap my fingers and say, ah, shucks. I don't really care.
Do we want to tackle that now, or do you want to talk a little bit about the wilderness, the outdoors, the things you've been doing outside of video games?
Oh, ooh. Yeah.
I can also talk about really the wilderness.
Easy. Oh, really? Okay, I'll go first, and I can keep it relatively quick because it's just my usual routine now in the summer. I went out camping this weekend. It was wonderful. I enjoyed all of the normal things someone does while camping, including going on two hikes, which both were very nice. Nothing super notable about either of them besides I got to try out some new camping gear that was it was really good that I got to try it out in a controlled test setting before I tried backpacking with it, because I could have froze to death because I did not dress warm enough for how cold it was out this last evening, and so I ended up having to steal some clothes of Sierra's to stay warm in our tent. But yeah, that was pretty much that's been my weekend so far.
Nice.
Yeah, I got a little too close to the long dark on last night's sleeping excursion, but I'm doing better now.
Sorry. Nice. I'm proud of you for not going into that long dark, spraining both of your ankles.
Yeah, not yet. what about you, Cookie? What has you outdoors?
So one of my friends ended up getting a one wheel a couple of weeks ago, and me and Lizzie went over to his place to ride it for a little bit. And that thing is all terrain, kind of.
Is a one wheel like a cooler way to say unicycle, or
so think of a skateboard, put one wheel in the middle.
Oh, holy shit. It's, yeah. I've seen some of those things. Those are pretty cool. I didn't know that you could actually buy them. I thought people like built them because they all look very jank, to be polite.
I like that. Now, yes, you can buy them. Ooh, I wonder how I would go about building one. Oh, but they're self-balancing. I don't want to build one.
Yeah, you don't want to build one that bucks you off. That's cool. Okay, I know what you're talking about now.
Did you have any big spills while you were on the one wheel?
Lizzie kind of ran over her ankle a little bit, but she wasn't nearly as bad off as my friend was when he first tried the one wheel at Shields. He still complains about it. He ended up buying one after that, so, you know, it wasn't that bad. He said he was fairly impressed with pretty much everything I was doing. He was like, you're picking this up way too quickly. It was kind of jolly.
You're a natural.
I like riding on boards. Put me on a board and I kind of just assume I'm not going to fall off, and I tend to not fall off anymore.
Yeah, you skateboarded before and you snowboard as well, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it all ends up kind of being the same basic premise as for like staying on the board. So I can see how it definitely helps having those skills carry over.
Yeah, and the one wheel, it's like, you both have rollerbladed before, right?
Yeah.
Have you ever ice skated?
Also, yes.
So you know like how when you rollerblade and when you ice skate, like comparing the two, one just feels a little slipperier?
Yes.
And then if you've ever longboarded and snowboarded, how they're kind of roughly the same, but one's a little slicker if you're in like fresh powder and it's kind of nice with the snowboarding. This is somewhere in between the longboarding and snowboarding.
Okay. Huh.
So it's kind of pretty easy to pick up.
Yeah, that's nice to know. I actually haven't tried longboarding since I've really gotten into snowboarding, and this only further motivates me to now try one wheeling. And is that what you call it? Just one wheeling? Popping a one wheelie the whole way, and then longboarding.
Pretty much. But yeah, no, the one wheel's it was pretty fun, pretty interesting. And then
how fast
today,
do you think you get to go on those?
No, you're fine. The one that TJ has is, I think it's the 20 mile per hour one.
It's actually a pretty good clip for, you know, a motorized single wheel.
There's a faster one, but he opted not to get that one.
The highway model at 55?
Pretty much. I think the faster one's like 30 miles per hour.
Gotcha.
Which, you know, taking a fall at 20 miles per hour is one thing. Taking a fall at 30 miles per hour, completely new beast of awfulness. But yeah, so one wheeled for a little bit yesterday, and today I put in a fence post and installed a new chain link fence door to the other side of our yard, so that way when I start grabbing more dirt to fix the patio and re-even that out, I'll have a fence that has a door on the other side that's easily accessible. It's going to be nice.
How's it feel to be a homeowner living the American life, or American dream, excuse me?
I don't think homeowning is the American dream anymore, Neil.
I think the American dream is sleeping with a lot of porn stars and then becoming president.
Is that the American dream, though? I don't really have that dream. but I don't really call myself American. Ooh, Swagatron. They make the electric unicycle. It's only $400. It's much cheaper than the one wheel. I can afford that.
Well, aside from working on your fence and riding the one wheel, I believe you've been playing some Detroit Become Human.
I played Detroit Become Human exactly one time.
And in that setting, you beat the game?
Yes.
Oh, wow.
How long did that take you?
It was 11 hours. 11 hours, and I did end up doing a thing like a few times where I like unloaded the scenario and reloaded it back because I didn't like the outcome I got. So I kind of cheated in that way, but I'm glad I did. And the only reason I'm glad I did is because of the way what the main menu does for you.
Mm.
Yes. So before we really get into the heart of the topic, let's set a warning that there are going
spoilers
to be spoilers
ahoy.
For Detroit Become Human.
Cool.
Beep boop.
Lots of spoilers.
Spoiler. Beep boop. Spoiler.
We need like a sound clip to announce it a little better, I think.
What, than me just going, spoiler. Spoiler.
Detroit Become Human. Before we talk about the story elements of it, how was your experience overall, Cookie? Did you enjoy the game? Did it meet up with your expectations?
Or was it a super long 11 hours?
It was a beautiful game that kept me enthralled. And by about 2 o'clock in the morning, I was like, you know what? I can end right here and be just fine. And then something stupid happens. And then I'm like, well, now we got to see what the next scene is. And then it's just at 6 o'clock. It's like, okay, I could really stop right here. It seems like the finale's coming up. Ooh, that was kind of interesting and shiny. Let's see where this is going to take us. And then next thing you know, it's 7:45 in the morning. And you're like, fuck. I started playing it very late that night.
7 in the morning. Holy cow. You know, that actually reminds me of the first time I played Heavy Rain. I started around maybe early evening, maybe a little later, and finished around 7 or 8 a.m. and proceeded to stay up the rest of the day.
Yep, that's how it tends to happen. And unfortunately, the last time I did this was when I first started playing Persona 5, but that wasn't to get to the end of the game. That was to get to the end of the first fucking dungeon.
Yeah. Yeah. Those dungeons can take a while. I think maybe like I should probably disclose that I entered this game having extremely low expectations.
What, after and your glowing review like, of David Cage last time?
Yeah, exactly. So Heavy Rain, like I also had like a pretty high, like I felt pretty good about the game by the end of it. And it was after multiple play, like it was after playthroughs afterwards where I started to kind of see a lot of the flaws in the game. And like the issues I had with it got worse or just I seemed to aggravate them more. In Quantic Dream's defense, they had said that, you know, Heavy Rain is a game that you're supposed to play once and be done with it. But that just doesn't really make sense from like a way you're supposed to pitch a game that has multiple endings and so forth. Like, you want your game to be enjoyable across multiple playthroughs. Otherwise, like, why even have like branching storylines and so forth?
To make sure that everyone gets to experience something different and every story is a unique one.
That's actually exactly the reason, I guess, or their justification. But Detroit Become Human, I think, aims for something a little different because they actually want you to play multiple times and get all the different outcomes in order to get points that you use in their shop or their collection, I guess, which unlocks...
Have you been to the collection?
Yes.
So what's the expensive item there? Because everything seems to be like $200 to $300. So after your first playthrough, I've bought most of everything.
Yeah, I didn't really look through all the look at the prices specifically, so I'm assuming videos would probably be the most expensive ones, but I could be wrong because the character models are only like $150.
I like the first art book ended up being more than some of the videos are. Hmm. Yeah, like the videos tend to be $250 to $350.
So maybe that's the most expensive thing there.
Because yeah, it didn't seem like there was enough stuff to justify all the points I had, because I had a lot of points by the end of this game.
Yeah. Also, entering that game with as low of expectations as I did, I think Detroit actually impressed me a lot more than I was expecting. And like you, the story really kind of like sank its teeth into me. And there are definitely some issues I had with the writing as a whole. But really, I think the biggest flaw or the biggest thing that annoyed me more was the gameplay itself. Tiffany pointed out an article to me that where the headline was Detroit Become Human, something like good or great gameplay hindered by a lackluster story or something along those lines. And I honestly was just like, what the hell is this person talking about? Or like, how do you come up with that headline when this game, just like Heavy Rain, has you going through the whole, like, this doesn't really happen, but to kind of describe the monotony of it, the shake your controller to shake your orange juice, the do a half circle to, you know, tuck in your bed, that type of stuff. And it's not like that didn't exist in other games. It's just that we've had multiple generations of QTE driven and QTE solely QTE / choice driven games at this point. But I feel like it's just kind of annoying having to go through the first few chapters of the game doing all
cleaning
that.
Simulator?
Yeah. What's that?
Cleaning simulator.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of those prompts weren't terrible, but there were some that were just like, really? Really? Like, the fact that you have to use the touch bar on the PlayStation 4 controller to access any of the magazines. Like, why? That's not my resting position.
I found myself liking that, though, because it makes sense in a thing of, oh, yeah, you would normally just swipe left on an actual screen, so we'll just put you on an actual touch thing.
Well, so
swipe left on.
Did you notice, though, the interesting thing with the swipe directions when you're going down pages?
Was there supposed to be something interesting? Because you just swipe down for that.
But
you swipe down.
Up.
But if you think about like how we access our iPads or our phones and stuff now, we would swipe up to view something further down on the page.
Mm-hmm. Oh, shit. You're right. God damn it, they had it wrong. They had it wrong.
But at the same time, like the other issue I had was that this game had at least had me personally doing a lot of camera movements, which uses your right analog stick.
But which is also your contextual interaction.
Exactly. The majority of the things you interact with, and we're not talking about like time dependent, stress filled situations, although those do come up too. But it's like, oh, you know, I need to pick up this cup of coffee. But
I need to look at it first. And that initiates part of the picking it up picking, as well. Or sometimes that it doesn't.
Yeah, that could initiate
you picking up the
else.
Magazine.
Right.
You're like, I want to look at this. Picking up magazine. Fuck!
So it's just like there are multiple points. I understand the idea is that they want you to keep your hands on those two sticks, those two analog sticks, and on your shoulder keys. But I just feel like it would have been smoother. There are so many other games we play where we have to use camera control with the right analog stick and then hit buttons afterwards, like X, circle, triangle, square, the face buttons, I guess you could say. So it's not like it's that hard of a concept to, you know, separate those buttons and then use the analog stick when it comes to things like true QTE events that are happening in like a scene. The other thing too is that while the game has you go through all of those mundane tasks at the start of, it seems like, I would say it's the start of each character's chapters, with the exception of Connor, who is the, we'll say he's like the detective character, if you will.
He is the detective character.
Yeah, well, the issue is that like while it explains things out as broad as daylight in terms of your controls using those mundane actions, I guess, it really kind of fails to tell you or educate you on other aspects of the game, like when you're constructing possible simulations, that once you go past a certain point, you can't undo that. And on the flip side, the game is also very upfront with the fact that if you happen to linger on a magazine page too long, it will prompt you saying that, oh, if you want to do something else, you can swipe the touch bar. It just seems like an unevenness of quote-unquote tutorials. And at times, I guess like this is probably my biggest complaint, is that the game just kind of misses its mark over like what we as players need to know and what we don't need to know. Like I don't need to have practice with my controls, especially because I chose the option saying I'm an experienced game player or whatever. So I don't
need their defense. I play games. I played the demo of this.
I was going to say, in their defense, they only gave you permadeath, no time limits. Were there like experience versus casual?
Wait. How does permadeath work in this? Do you lock yourself out of chapters if you kill? Oh, I guess your characters probably don't die, do they?
Because
I'm just thinking of the demo with Connor, and if there were other chapters loaded up for Connor, it's going to be really hard when he gets blasted in the brain or jumps off a building, which are like half of the outcomes in that demo.
So before we go any further, we are opening the doors to story now, I'd say.
Yeah.
Do you want to answer? Because I did happen to figure out what would happen if Connor sacrifices himself at the start of the game.
Oh, it's like a really good way for you to say I made a mistake and Connor is no longer with us.
So Connor actually does get replaced by like other Connors, and his memories just transferred from one Connor to another Connor.
Oh,
I believe, because I killed my Connor on my second playthrough, but I haven't gotten far enough in to actually use Connor again. But I think that's how they're going to do that. Now, when it comes to like Kara, who's going to be like super individualized, are Marcus. I almost called him Malcolm. God, I'm racist. Marcus. So there is one scene where Marcus quite literally puts himself back together because of an outcome that happened for me. And there's, I believe that Kara might actually be able to die at like the very beginning.
Oh, the very beginning.
Yeah, depending on what happens with, so my second playthrough, I'm going to be playing it very Android-y. so I'm not going to try and like defy my programming at all. So I'm going to see kind of what happens with the story that way.
I was very curious about how those playthroughs, like how that type of a playthrough would go too. Like as soon as I got done with the game, I was asking myself like what would possibly be different if I chose to be as machine as possible?
I think a lot of things would be different because just based on the demo, like demo videos of introducing Kara, everyone kind of knew that, yeah, the one guy beats his child to death and blames Kara. And I think something happens after that.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that. That's interesting. I also didn't watch any of the demos, with the exception of the rooftop scene literally like a year ago or whenever they showed it. I think it was last E3.
So this video was not last year. It was the second video that got really shown after the Connor video or something. It was around that like same time before I like completely blacked myself out of like everything Detroit Become Human. I did see like you kind of knew that Kara is going to be in like an abusive household. And then at some point he says, stay here, goes upstairs. And then he comes downstairs crying and says, it's all your fault. And then like the thing cuts to like black. And I was like, well, I know that that's going to happen if I don't defy programming. But either way, so I want to play this as Scott as possible. Sorry, Scott.
And how is that exactly?
You know, not human.
Yeah, let's maybe frame this a little better for Scott and for anyone that doesn't give a shit about spoilers or the story, but are interested enough in the story. Detroit follows three central characters who are all androids, and each of them are in radically different positions. Connor is a cyber life, which is basically the company that makes all of these androids. He's a cyber life agent and
prototype.
So he's specifically a prototype too, the most advanced android basically possible at this point. And he is essentially looking into androids that are showing emotions, and they basically malfunctions in their programming that they're calling deviants. Kara,
so that dude's a narc,
pretty much.
Kara, so, yeah, so or Kara, depending on how you know which character is pronouncing her name, is a basically like a housekeeping android that gets put back together after essentially getting beaten to pieces by her owner. And she is in charge of looking after this drug addict and his daughter. And obviously she starts to awaken when the daughter faces injury or, faces the abusive father. And then your third character, Marcus, is in a much better situation, at least to begin with, where he's also a prototype. He's owned by a famous artist who is very, very old, and the artist basically treats him like his son. In fact, they go as far as to have the actual son character be a complete jackass tool, and Marcus, on the other hand, is like very respectful to the artist. We can maybe talk a bit about Marcus's like pre quote unquote breakthrough. The son is like abusive to his father, not necessarily physically, but the son's also a drug addict, it seems like.
And yeah, the son's a drug addict, the father's rich, and like he's a wealthy painter, basically.
Yeah.
So the son basically comes around just to take money from him and kind of milk him of his fortune, basically.
The level of complexity or sophistication with his programming in particular, though, is also, I think, more drawn out than any of the other characters or any other androids, because he's actually made by someone different from Cyberlife, apparently. And he happens to show signs of individuality even before, as all three characters eventually could have their breakout period, where it involves them like going into the quote-unquote simulated virtual world, except instead of blue, it's tinted red, and they are physically within the virtual world, breaking through the barrier that tells them not to do something. Like, even before Marcus has his deviant moment, he draws a picture, or paints a picture, at the wish of his quote unquote father, the artist, that like is supposedly drawn coming from nothing. He's supposed to imagine something that he doesn't see or has never seen. And depending on the answers, I don't know if it ever changes, but for me, it was a self-portrait. And it's like very...
It does change, depending on what you choose.
Interesting. Do you like my hand turkey, Daddy?
So what was yours, Neil?
Mine was a self-portrait that was kind of Go-esque, Van Gogh-esque in ways.
Okay, what was the themes of colors?
Oh my gosh, I hardly remember, but red, I think, was the background, and...
Okay, so you chose the same route that I went. It was identity and like fear or anger, or one of those two, or doubt.
I think
because mine was also a red background with a self-portrait of me, like looking kind of sinister or meanish. Lizzie chose society and understanding or something like that. Hers was a black background with two sets of hands. One set of hands was painted in dripping blue, and one set of hands was dripping and painted red. So bluebirds. So the androids have blue blood, the humans have red blood. So it was kind of like a getting to know each other, understanding type of thing. Those are the only two pictures I've seen so far.
Interesting.
Apparently there are 12 different painting outcomes that you can get. So there's... It's actually kind of surprising that you guys got the exact same when you consider that it was a 1 in 12 chance
for us to get the same painting, but we went the distance and melded minds for a moment.
Yeah, you guys have a lot in common.
We both apparently focus on the individual when it comes to a game about the individual developing consciousness. At least the start of the game really frames... Like that's maybe one of the things I did appreciate. Like, we knew what Detroit Become Human was going to be about. The first chapters really do focus more on the individual, and as the game progresses, assuming characters' lives don't end prematurely, and I don't know how else it would happen, but as the game progresses, it becomes more about the individual's, like, collectively, what their problems are, what issues they have to face. And I'm not necessarily... I'm not saying that was not expected. I'm just saying that it was a good and steady development and a shift between central characters to potentially the greater good and how this affects everyone. But with that in mind, just to briefly, as I allude to there, it's... The story basically shifts from the individual character's struggles to essentially how is society and how are humans going to deal with all of these androids becoming deviants, quote unquote, or essentially developing their own consciousness or awakening it, and how are you as these specific characters going to usher in this, like, this conflict. So Marcus is obviously going, or, well, not obviously, but Marcus basically has a falling out, we'll say. His owner passes away, and he gets tossed into, and now I don't know if this always happens, but...
His owner can live.
Really?
So one of the branches, because I was like reading the branches after that, one of the branches was like, what's his name, lives. Or it's when Marcus gets to like play piano when he's sitting alone, actually like deep into the game, one of the branches was like, what's his face, lives.
So this... Neil's just a bad caretaker.
I also got the guy killed, and I didn't realize that. I like the way the story progresses, I didn't think he could live until I read that. Then I was like,
that's super, that's really interesting,
because you don't get to see like everything that can happen, and every once in a while, like in the later chapters, when you're looking, it has like different starting branches, and these starting branches are based off of what happened earlier in the game. One of those was, what's his face, old dude lives, so Marcus gets these choices, this branch rather than the branch that I was on. And I was like, so now I need to figure out how to make him live.
Let me guess, you didn't stick up for yourself, or you didn't have Marcus stick up for himself.
I went deviant, but I didn't fight back.
Same here, and I bet that was the damning decision.
Look at us going the same way.
Man, yeah, you guys are finding out that you'd behave very similarly as robots.
Well, so as we both alluded to, Marcus eventually, assumedly, ends up as essentially the leader of the resistance or the revolution, however it pans out. So he's leading a bunch of androids, and how you choose to lead these androids, whether it's in peaceful protest or essentially like a violent revolution, the game, at least on the peaceful protest side, which I'm assuming at this point is what Cookie also did, it does a very good job of pushing you back and like trying to get you to rethink and reevaluate the way you play or the decisions you make, which at the very least, like after our first playthrough, at least it seems like it is really effective in giving you reason to doubt yourself, or I guess like further making the game and its decisions or its choices more thrilling.
So I guess let me say this real fast, Neil. So I went full peaceful, except for the last line of my speech. I did like the stern one. Did you do that?
No. You mean the speech leading up to
the revolution? Yeah.
Yeah, I did not. I went entirely pacifist.
Okay, so yeah. So I did stern right there. So that kind of like tipped off some things. And then at the very, very, very end, I went, we fight back. Did you stick with pacifism at that point?
I stuck with pacifism.
See, I doubted myself and changed my mind. So I'm kind of curious how your ending went.
It's interesting because while Marcus is very, like, he has a very vital role to how the big picture looks, Connor also does too, to an extent. As Marcus and Kara are both going through their nonsense, Connor is constantly trying to figure out like what's up with these deviants, when the answer is, at least as the player, pretty clear that it's just, you know, androids forming consciousness. Connor is basically just going through a bunch of different jobs or investigations, and essentially what I guess like what we're supposed to take from it is an opportunity to have a like a wild card in the mix, because there comes a point where Connor, you can basically, you have Connor and Marcus essentially face off against each other, and you control both of their dialogues or both of their dialogue options. So it's kind of like a more effective way of like making the story, or like, I guess, puppeteering the story to what you want to see. So if you wanted to see conflict there, like you as the player, even if you favor one result, can choose Connor to disagree with Marcus, or you can choose to have them more like agree with each other, that sort of thing.
And did you have them agree?
Yeah, I had played Connor in a way that he was like fairly mission first to begin with,
and then he slowly started to become more human.
Yeah,
after the two strippers held hands.
I killed these strippers.
Oh, you killed the strippers? I let the strippers go.
The context is so good.
The lack of context, guys.
Connor has like a lot of moral decisions to make are based more upon his own sin, I guess you could say, or like his own judgment of individual characters, whereas Marcus, his decisions affect a large group of people. Like, talking about peaceful protest, there are points where I'm assuming you could either, you know, kill a bunch of people or get a bunch of your own people killed based on how you react and respond to different scenarios. Whereas Connor, on the other hand, is given situations where he runs, like he catches a criminal, and the criminal obviously is shaken and terrified for their lives, which is supposedly the deviant trait. Androids should not feel emotions. They should not feel empathy, fear of death, for that matter, anger, or any of that. And as Connor, you basically end up serving, in some cases, as like their judgment, their judge, and their punishment, or their forgiveness, I guess. It's a really, really nice, I guess, dynamic, being able to switch between these two characters and have to focus on the psyche of one person as opposed to how it affects the group and vice versa. But Kara, on the other hand, is basically playing like survival and escape the entire game, which leads me to an interesting question for you, Cookie, because Kara, it looks like Kara's journey is one of sacrifice at the end if you do not play a pacifist Marcus. Did you have to sacrifice anything as Kara?
Myself.
Oh, really? Kara did not survive.
Nope. So even though I was playing pacifist, there was still a lot of, whatchacallit going on. A lot of, like, hostility going on. So we ended up missing the boat, the bus. So we took a boat across the, river, and the National Guard ended up... Wait, what are you laughing at?
Keep going.
So we missed the bus, so we had to take a boat across the river. The National Guard ended up shooting at a bunch of the boats, and I got in the way of, what's her name? And protected her.
Alice, the
and,
girl?
Yeah, I got in the way of Alice and ended up getting shut down, basically, after making sure Alice made it across to Canada. But I think Alice might have died, too. I'm not sure.
So, you didn't get any post-scene where, like, Luther and Alice were fine or anything like that?
Nope. Oh, who's Luther? No, Luther died.
Oh, man.
Yep, no, that's Luther. Yeah, Luther ended up taking a bullet during the escape from the boat. And I played Kara very... I love you, Luther. We were on the family tree, but I had to protect Alice first after finding out the twist of Alice.
Scott, is it okay if we go into deep, deep spoilers?
Yeah, that's fine.
So Alice, the girl that Kara saves, turns out to actually be an android this whole fucking time.
So she sacrifices her life for another android?
I mean, you find out beforehand, but leading up to that point, because it's pretty late in the game, you kind of... That relationship symbolizes the coexistence of androids and humans. It's a human girl being cared for by an adult woman, or adult android woman and female android, doesn't matter, android. And it was the failings of a human parent that put them in the situation. When the reveal comes that Kara had been an android this whole time.
You mean that Alice had been an android this whole time?
Yeah. Had been the android this whole time. It kind of like undermines the, at least it did for me, like the gravity of their situation. Like they're still obviously in just as shitty a position. I mean, having a human girl, daughter, whatever, would not have helped in any way either. It's just that like, That was now about the plight of androids.
Yeah, now he's being dickish to his lawnmower and not to his human child.
Which, you know, basically just means that their struggle from the beginning was purely about android, you know, rights and androids, like individuality, freedom to live and exist peacefully and so on. It's just like, after that reveal, I guess...
Did you hug her or did
you? Yeah, absolutely. There's no reason not to hug her. Like what? That was like the dumbest decision in this whole game. Is like,
what's the alternative option? Toss her in the water?
You as Kara discover that she's an android because you see the exact same model sitting someplace else in different clothes, and you're like, and that one has like the LED in their temple
circle.
So it's like, oh, it's an android. So you go back to Kara or to Alice.
To Alice,
and you have the option to hug or be distant, and it's like, what's the problem? Like, you've already decided that androids are people, so why would you not love this girl as much as an android as if she were human?
It seems very counterintuitive, for sure.
But Kara never decided that androids were people. she's strictly just been out for Alice, this little girl that she's been trying to protect. And Alice has been saying at different points of the thing, she's like, I want to tell you something, but you'll be mad if I do. And God, what was his name's name? The big dude.
Luther.
And Luther's like, hey, man, there's something I got to tell you about Alice. And it's like, oh, we'll talk about it later. So yeah. The signs were there. And actually, shit, what's her name picked up the, if you picked up the magazine while you were cleaning, she picked up the magazine and saw that she was an android at the very beginning and then just bleeped that the fuck out.
Yep. I remember thinking to myself, it's really weird that she has this weird reaction on her face and then we don't get to see the magazine.
Pretty much.
Although at the time, since I didn't know what any of that portion of the game would be like, since I've only known what the rooftop negotiation scene was, at the time I assumed that what she saw was potentially an ad for another android. Well, I mean, another, like, made android.
That's kind of where it brings you to think. But then again, he's also kind of poor.
Yeah, negative $1,000 or something in his bank account. Overwhelming debt. Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
So I was laughing before when you were talking about taking the boat across the border, right?
Yeah.
When you got to the buses, that's when you get the reveal that, oh, we need tickets. Oh no, we got to get tickets, right?
Oh, wait, so you took the short route and actually made it to the bus one time?
Yeah, because I only had like 9 minutes left and the long route would have apparently been 11 minutes. That was the ETA.
Yep.
So I just was like, fuck it. Going for the bus. So you never made it to the bus stop then?
So I made it to the bus stop, but the bus had already left. I took the long route. I was like, you know what? Buses leave late sometimes. And it looked like everyone was still there, but nah, everyone wasn't there. So you didn't have tickets? I thought you had tickets.
Well, you got $50. Like, so, okay, when I played this entire game with Tiffany, and to fully explain, you get there, you don't have tickets, and they're like, oh, we need tickets. Oh, no. Which, again, to me was like, well, that's, didn't you see this coming? And as you go around and hear, you know, all the random banter, you will encounter a mother cradling a child, and the husband comes, so that makes him a party of three, which happens to be two adults and one child. They talk about like, oh, you got the tickets, right? Yeah, they're right here. And then they go walk off towards the bus, but as they do that, the tickets basically just fall out of her bag and you pick them up. And at that point I was just like, I literally had to creep past guards, save Luther, and do all this other nonsense to get here. Not to mention in past chapters, constantly like getting my character shot up to get somehow surviving. I'm not taking any more chances. So I take the tickets. They come back. They give you two chances to give the tickets back. And I just did not either time.
Way to take the bus.
But Tiffany reminded me afterwards that, well, you got $50 from Rose beforehand, so I'm assuming you could have potentially just bought the tickets. I don't know. There has to be some sort of reason why you couldn't just buy the tickets and they give you the chance to steal other people's tickets, because you don't use the money afterwards in any way.
It's probably you get to the ticket counter if you find it, no more tickets left. Type of thing probably happens, unless you bump into the family first. Who knows how these things work? I only beat the game once. And I'm watching Lizzie go through it a second time with her own, like, volition, just to see how she reacts to everything. And then while she's doing that, I'm also going through it again as well.
What happened to your Connor and Marcus?
So Connor ends up going to... So Connor and Marcus join teams. Connor goes to the big android place, and he ends up basically being sacrificing himself. Connor's partner ends up sacrificing himself. Connor switches places with the other Connor, and then we rally our troops and head out. Marcus, I decided to go to war on that last one. Pretty much everybody dies.
Marcus dies too?
Marcus does live. And then at the end, when Marcus is giving his speech, Marcus almost dies again because fucking Connor is didn't actually go deviant.
Oh, so you...
So Connor was allowed to go deviant, and then he didn't actually go deviant, but since I learned that there was a back door, I was able to get out and reestablish control of myself and not shoot Marcus in the back of the head.
Oh, okay. So, that's exactly what I did. So he just... He had his gun out, and then he just put it back, and people in the crowd are like, what the fuck is he doing?
So I just assume that if you don't hear that there's a back door, you don't get that option.
I'm gonna try not to get the back door. You might be able to still do it. Because I heard that too, because I did not shoot the
girl.
Yeah, at Kamsky's place.
Totally going to shoot the girl at Kamsky's place. If I get to go to Kamsky's place, because there's also a branch where you don't get the lead and you don't go to Kamsky's place.
So how did Hank die? Because our Connor playthrough was pretty similar, I'm assuming, but Hank ends up living in mine. In fact, Hank ends up getting the gun after the two Connors fight. Hank has to decide which Connor to shoot. And the only reason that I'm able to survive, or the only reason I'm able to convince him as Connor, is because I happen to learn Hank's son's name, which is nice. Literally one small, insignificant, prompt that you get when you're at his desk at one point. No, not at his desk. It's when you break into his house.
Yeah. So Hank ends up being threatened by the other Connor. He ends up trying to grab the gun. I forget which decision I made there, but he gets shot. And then I also get shot, but then the other Connor goes over me and starts to gloat, so I grab that Connor's hand, switch places with him. That Connor goes, well played, dies, and then Hank's like, well, time for me to go see my son, don't save me, and then he dies.
Oh, interesting. So when they're fighting for the gun... I think you have like two or three different options. You did not choose to intervene at that point.
Nope. Yep. I chose to touch the other android.
Are you able to convert that android before?
I didn't realize I was going to have to mash X, so I didn't start until like a full second too late. A second later, and then it was like by the time I got to almost the very top, then they come out. So I'm not sure, but now that I know I have to mash X there, I can actually just like start it at the very beginning. If I end up going that route, because like I said, I'm going to play him very, he's going to get his mission done. So if he gets to confront Marcus, he is going to try everything he can to get that mission done.
Damn, it's, oh man, that game. There's a lot of possibilities. I'm hoping. I was going to say, so if you continue to be a pacifist with Marcus till the end, what happens is at the border, customs border checkpoint, everyone has to go through and get their biometrics scans and their IDs checked. And that would basically filter out any androids. And if they found androids, they would go and shoot them basically. The pacifist route basically the idea is you're going through this line, you get to look around and identify other androids, assuming they've survived, like Jerry from the amusement park.
The Jerry's. I ended up saving two Jerry's.
Two? I only had one Jerry.
I had two Jerry's that I saved. Everyone was kind of being hunted down in the streets, though, so it wasn't even at like the border checkpoint since I went... Rebel at the very end there.
Oh, okay. Getcha. Well, so Jerry, I'm trying to think of who else. Rose ends up showing up with her son too. And there's another person I can't remember, but you can basically use any of the characters to sacrifice, not Rose or her son, but you can choose to use like Luther or Jerry, I think, to create a diversion when Kara and Alice get up to their turn through the checkpoint. But if you do the pacifist route, if you choose not to sacrifice anyone, basically you end up pleading with the border patrol to let you through, just, you know, and the idea is that the, like, because the protest is peaceful, the guard looks up and sees the TV and lets you through because, you know, because he, like, sympathizes with you.
Oh, nice.
I don't know if there's anything else. I there's a lot more we could probably talk about, but
big things have kind of been mostly hit, but yeah, so it sounds like we had mostly similar playthroughs until, like, the very, very end.
No, go ahead.
I was going to say, since I was stern on my last line, that kind of put my, I ended up shooting one, the guard who was going to get away. I ended up shooting him because I didn't want the cops to be called. What's her name? Did become my lover as Marcus, North. She did become my lover. But I did end up shooting a guard and my last thing was stern. So public opinion of me wasn't, like, great. And it never really got better. So while we were at the border patrol, they ended up saying, okay, everyone's got to disperse. We missed the bus. We're also going to be scanning people. So we duck into an alley. Rose and her son show up and they haul us to the thing and blah, blah, blah. But yeah, it sounds like we had very similar playthroughs.
Did you have to leave Simon behind when you hijacked the broadcast room?
Which one was Simon?
The blonde one.
Sounds like he got tossed. Who's Simon?
No, I didn't lose anybody when I hijacked the broadcast room.
So I fucked up when I was approaching the two guards in front of the broadcast room, got Simon shot, and then at that point, Simon's a liability for the rest of the mission. Not really. He does his work and stuff, but we end up having to leave him behind because he was shot, he ends up getting shot more. And then as Connor, when you're investigating the broadcast room, I'm assuming you can actually go up to the roof and kill Simon, but before I could, or interrogate him, capture him, whatever. But before I could even get up to that point, I ended up talking to the three androids with one deviant in there. So that ended up
everything.
Yeah, that ended up keeping me from.
Yeah, everything definitely just
confronting Simon. Yeah, so Simon ends up meeting up with the rest of the group. So it probably went back to what your experience was because you never lost Simon to begin with. Interesting. There's mm-hmm. definitely like a lot of weaving in and out in this narrative. Like lots of ways to branch off, but then also join back up to the main branch. And maybe that's actually how... Maybe the game isn't actually all that diverse, but it's a matter of... finding points where the stories can diverge and then converge in a way that makes you, like, gives you the illusion that it's grander than it actually is.
No, I could see that.
Interesting. Well, Cookie, did you play any other games this week?
Yes, I did, actually. I ended up playing Beat Saber. It is a rhythm virtual reality game where it's like, hey, do you want to be a Jedi? Here you go. And it gives you a red lightsaber and a blue lightsaber. And it's basically like, hey, destroy these blocks going in a specific direction and do it to the beat, basically. Easy is way too easy. Normal's still way too easy. Hard is easy, but not super easy. Expert is both very difficult and moderately okay. Fun game. Good workout.
I can talk about my most recent return to the forests of Northern Canada in the Long Dark on an upcoming episode. But I will note that the reason that I'm even returning to this topic is A, I finally lifted my ban on playing the game, and B, it was a good decision because they implemented a patch that essentially lets you toggle with so many settings about the game that you can now pretty much create your custom sandbox experience. And having another week's time to play and tool around with it will only increase the benefit of my conversation. So we can leave it at that.
So did they implement the multiplayer mode yet? So we can play together?
I haven't followed up on anything like that. But if you're interested in multiplayer in games that once seemed horribly broken, I was reading something about No Man's Sky getting close to implementing that.
Indeed, indeed. It's trying to come back from the dead. I don't think I'll download it, though.
Yeah, I mean, I like to follow up on the principle of, like, if you try and sell me a broken piece of shit initially with some half-truths or flat-out lies, then I'm probably not going to give you the benefit of doubt, even if you fix it and follow through on those promises.
That one. I keep reading articles that The Division's not dead, so I ended up booting that up the other day, and it was...
still dead?
It was pretty much what I remember it being, so yeah.
You walked
I'll just
in
leave
on
you
carcass.
With a carcass. I'll just leave you with a teaser statement that I'm a fix wolves, so...
Nice.
Yeah.
No more rubber banded wolves.
Mm-hmm.
Well, since we brought up No Man's Sky, Nyx, the patch that will essentially be bringing all of these great, amazing changes that the game was supposed to release with.
Is it spelled NYX or NIX?
NEXT.
NEXT.
Oh, next. Sorry. My mic was a little weird on that. Go ahead.
Let's talk about some news. So, first off, Resident Evil 7 cloud version. That's the Switch's version of Resident Evil 7. Have you guys heard about it?
No, not until just now.
Quite literally just now.
Notice, I just wanted to bring up cloud immediately because this is a streaming version of Resident Evil 7. You will not be downloading the game or playing it offline. You will have to
connect. Is it because the file size is too big?
I think it might be a hardware limitation as well.
Yeah.
Wait.
I mean, I thought you meant it was going to be Final Fantasy VII's cloud in Resident Evil 7 and the greatest crossover event in history.
I just imagine you running around those tight corridors with that big-ass sword.
Oh, shit, I can't turn around. It's too big. But I can see Sephiroth around the corner.
So they actually had a trial version go live a handful of days ago, or this past week. It was only in Japan, though, so if you actually went through the trouble of... I think you would have had to create a Japanese Nintendo account, but if you had tried to play it from here, you would have been dealing with potentially hundreds of milliseconds of lag, if not, maybe not even been able to play the game at all. I don't know if it has like a limit, like PSO2... which released in Japan on the Switch. It's also a cloud version. If you play it in any place or state where the lag or the response is large enough, it will basically tell you that you cannot play. It will not let you play PSO2, Phantasy Star Online 2, by the way. I just wanted to bring this up in particular because I think the idea of streaming games on the Switch might sound cool, but for a console that's designed to be mobile and stationary, specifically the mobile part makes me kind of concerned. Are you just expected to have like a device that you can like a satellite device or a phone to use like LTE connection off of with your Switch at all times?
Yeah, the chances you're going to tether to like super good wireless connection for it, I'm guessing, are going to be pretty slim for a lot of players.
Basically, what they're saying is this is going to be the at-home game to play only. My issue with this is the fact that it is cloud only, and there's no like physical thing for you to download, or excuse me, digital thing for you to download to say, hey, I have the rights to this. Bam, as soon as one thing gets wiped, there's that game gone.
That's a really good point.
Additionally, what I've read is that you would be renting the game for $18 for 6 months.
Oh, that's not bad, actually.
The fact that they take away, essentially, the ability to even own the game, like, granted, that's what it's going to be if you're streaming, it still makes me hesitant.
Oh, I won't be getting it, but, yeah. RE7 was the most recent one, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, just making sure. I'm fine with that.
Yeah, I'm also fine with your hesitation.
What game would you support with a venture like this?
Not the prospect of Persona 4 Evermore. So last week we had a teaser, I guess you could say a subheader on the Persona magazine, basically saying Persona 4 evermore, Persona 4 is not dead, whatever, blah blah blah.
Is there a like monthly or quarterly release of a Persona magazine?
I think it might be monthly. I'd have to double check.
Wow.
But it's basically just a publication that Atlas puts out that hypes up all of their games, releases, etc., and related content.
Okay. It's not just Persona related then too. It's all of the other like Shin Megami Tensei.
I think it's mostly Persona related, but you also have to remember they have like manga, animes.
Yeah, they have a very large media franchise.
Yeah,
just with that series.
There's always stuff coming out in some form or another. Soundtracks, collector's editions, art books, etc.
The cat's painted to look like Morgana.
So when this popped up, a lot of people got their hopes up, thinking that there was going to be an HD remaster or remake of Persona 4. Days following that cover release, translators basically jumped in to confirm that no, the magazine site specifically states that there is no new Persona 4 title. It's basically a piece focusing on the legacy of Persona 4, talking about the P4 Arena Complete Series box, the Persona 4 Dancing All Night HD release, and the Dancing Triple Pack, as well as some other content. So no Persona 4 HD remaster or remake is expected or in development.
I wouldn't mind Persona 4 Arena being redone. You know what? Persona 5 Arena. Let's just do that.
And just carry in some Persona 4 characters or something.
Which if you told me it had not been announced by this point last year, I would have told you were full of shit. But we still actually don't have confirmation on it.
No, we do not.
Did you guys see essentially Sony's equivalent to the Elite controller for the PlayStation?
Nope. I'm Googling it now. Wait, are you talking about the Onyx by Hori?
No, I'm not. Let me pull up the article for you. I did not. But it's specifically SCUF is bringing their first ever Sony licensed third-party controller. It's called the SCUF Vantage.
Ah, okay.
And what I found particularly interesting is that the Hori that also did the asymmetrical analog stick layout.
Oh, I'm kind of disappointed in the SCUF controller, actually.
It looks a little weird.
But it's so crazy. No. I was going to ask, at what point does this go a little, it increases the grip size? Granted, a lot of these attachments can be customized, but does this not basically just turn this into an Xbox controller?
An Xbox controller with less options and features than the Xbox controller, SCUF controller.
Yeah.
What is it missing?
The Xbox version actually has the ability to turn the Xbox controller. You can switch the D-pad out with a joystick.
Oh, yeah. Or you can do a radial dish with the Xbox Elite,
mm-hmm.
which is really nice. Do you see these side bumpers? I'm not familiar with those on it, where you obviously have your triggers in front of you, but if you were to be holding your controller, the kind of like larger knuckles of your fingers could click these side bumpers on the edges of it.
What's talking about the sax button?
Yeah, the sax button.
Okay.
You've never played the sax button before?
No, and I have a... Yeah, go ahead and tell me about it.
I was just bullshitting you, but that's just one of the six programmable buttons.
Okay,
that go and along
then
with the
obviously the four like bottom paddles that get added.
Yep.
Yeah, those paddles are dope. I love those things.
Oh, so do you have a SCUF?
I have the Xbox Elite that I use for my computer gaming. And it's okay, but I wouldn't recommend it to anyone buying one. They should probably just get a SCUF because the left analog stick, part of it is constructed from plastic and it can like bend and deform over time. And mine has. And Hollow Knight, for instance, is a game that's responsive enough that even that little bend like gives me some feedback that I don't want when I play.
Oh my God, it is literally a sax button. It's S2 and S... Yeah, they're S2s.
Mm-hmm. That's what it looks like.
Yeah. Yeah, I think this is just kind of a pared-down version of the... it's literally called a sax button. Yeah, it's a pared down version of the Xbox version of the SCUF controllers. Just kind of looking at this versus like the other ones. I'm on SCUF's official website now. Sax button.
Yeah, I don't see anything about this that makes it look incredibly desirable, but I do like the ergonomic boomerang shape that it kind of has going for it. And their color scheme's cool. So they have that.
Wait, so is this like officially licensed by Sony now then?
That's what I was reading at least.
Yeah, at minimum, I'm reading it as like it's Sony sponsored.
Okay, because like they already have a PS4 controller, the SCUF Impact.
They also have a Bluetooth and wired connection option for it. What else is... Yeah, they do. Yeah, and the Impact is even more of a boomerang than the others.
Matter of fact, the Impact has more options, I think. The Impact has more options.
It doesn't have that like audio bar at the bottom. I think that's probably the biggest thing. But is that really that necessary?
Well, guys, I would like to continue the podcast, but before we can do that, I do need to update you on our privacy policy.
Oh, yeah, that's right. So you've probably not only gotten a privacy policy right now in your ears through our podcast, but through a variety of sources. Probably everywhere. Your emails, yeah, been spammed with things from Google, Facebook, any sort of, you know, like digital service provider has probably hit you up with the GDPR privacy law, which was, I believe, passed in 2016 and stands for the General Data Protection Regulation. For anybody who's not up to reading all of the terms and conditions that are being posted by these companies as they just squeeze in before the deadline of when they're supposed to have these rule changes implemented, this pretty much gives consumers the benefits to ask a website to delete any data that it holds on you. You can also download any data that a company has stored on you or your profile. And you can also request how the company is using your data for its own purposes, which gives people a lot more control over how they're used as a commodity through the companies that we use digitally. And I figured it was a good tie-in for anybody who does gaming will at least have to be reading a couple of these coming from probably the manufacturer of their consoles or their computers for
thanks
any sort of gaming. I know Steam updated theirs, I believe, recently, and I've just been flooded with these emails.
Thanks for giving me the TLDR, by the way.
Yeah, absolutely. It's much easier than reading like 8 hours worth of privacy policy updates.
Well, now that that's done, do you know what really makes me angry, Scott?
Women.
Women on video game covers.
Yeah, me too, man. My blood is boiling.
Wait, you guys
didn't go
female? And
that's not just
because
it's super hot out.
You guys didn't go female Shepard?
Oh, dude, FemShep was actually the only one I ever beat Mass Effect with. She was the only one I was brave enough to go all the way with.
Gross.
Sounds terrible. Can I rescind that?
Do you really resonate with Halo because you're in love with Cortana as well?
No, actually, I don't play that much Halo, and I don't know that much about Cortana's character.
Well, she's a video game.
TLDRs.
And you love Jane Shepard? I don't know.
Yeah, you're really stretching this one. Yes, I play with plenty of female avatars because I am an equal opportunity gamer, but partially
that also sounded really bad.
Well, sometimes the male character models in games are ugly as shit, and so I go for the like more visually appealing like female players. But sometimes I just feel like genders suit my like different genders suit my disposition for the day, and I end up creating a different character.
So basically what you just said is you like to dominate women and control their every
control
action.
Their every action, yeah, of all course. Right.
Before we go too far off topic, and we'll get back to this.
No, we're back on topic.
Battlefield 5 revealed their cover and I guess they showed or aired a reveal trailer this past week, featuring all but 5 seconds of gameplay, fake gameplay. And the most notable thing is that people are getting upset about a female character on the cover as well as being featured in the trailer.
Which is just some stupid shit. Like,
wait, people are getting angry about that?
Yeah. Yes.
I thought people were getting angry about the fact, my only like hate that I've actually read about this is the fact that there haven't been any, there's no actual gameplay footage.
Right, exactly. It's, I mean, but that's kind of what you expect.
But there's a Battlefield HUD that pops up that suggests that it's gameplay footage.
You know what we could do? We could go and shoot some first-person footage of us going into a 7-Eleven and then put a GTA HUD up and be like, this is GTA 6. Look how real it is.
Look at those graphics, yeah.
I'm getting a Slurpee.
So which GTA 5 character are we? Because I don't want to be the psychopath one.
Oh, sorry. That's the one you kind of fit.
Yeah.
Damn.
If it makes you feel any better, I would love to be him rather than the black one.
But okay.
We all got to fill our. Oh, yeah. Got to fill our roles.
Okay. Yeah. I don't know why it's a big issue that the cover art has a woman on it. That really doesn't impact anything about a game. And B, that it features probably a prominent balance between characters of each gender in the trailer. But I do understand maybe people being a little disappointed about the trailer, only in the sense that I look at it and I go, I don't understand what this is about whatsoever, but it's another Battlefield game. So it's probably going to play very similar to all the other Battlefield games I've ever played.
I look at it and I'm like, I can't tell the difference between friend and foe.
Yeah, that's how I feel in every Battlefield game, and that's why I used to occupy servers that had friendly fire off.
Mm, good call.
Makes sense. Yeah, this trailer, that was not real gameplay footage. It said it wants you to be real gameplay footage. I just got done watching the trailer for the first time. Yeah, this is definitely not real gameplay footage.
No way. But if they do implement sliding and shooting, I'm in. I love that.
What about, you mean the point where they say squad member spawns on you and this other character takes the time to whisper in your ear and say shh real quietly? Where's the shh real quietly button?
Yeah.
Where is that button at?
Before getting clobbered by a club?
Yeah.
Yeah, from that squad member who spawned on you.
I would really love to see a game actually implement that if you're going for a like a physical takedown cutscene and someone interrupts it, that they get a physical like intervention takedown cutscene on you. I'd especially like it if it could chain over and over. So you just have people lining up on each other to take them out.
Hey, did you guys ever play Medal of Honor Underground?
I don't think so.
You should look up the cover art for it. It's from the year 2000.
Does it have a girl?
You know what?
Yes.
That's what it does. That's what experts are saying. We can't truly tell because these are 2000, you know, year 2000 artwork. Very hard to tell from that.
So is it a human? Yeah.
Is it a human or an android?
It's a goddamn synth.
So,
yeah. Okay.
If you have questions or comments, you can write in at podcast@fancyramen.com.
Bueller.
And that does it. I'm Neil.
I'm Cookie.
And I'm Scott. And I don't know why Cookie didn't do his part.
Have a great week, everyone.
Wait, Scott, did you do your part?
I go last. Okay. We can chop and screw this in, Neil. It's going to work.
No, it's done. It is over. Finito.
Okay.
Oh, by the way, you guys should check in this upcoming week for I think it's going to be Buck playing Detroit Become Human.